Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of Signals from Mars, episode 447, featuring the man, the myth, the legend, Philip Schaus. Been hearing about Philip for so many years from friends from around the podcasting world. It is a thrill. It is a privilege to have him on this episode. And I think this is a cool conversation that you guys will enjoy.
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Quick reminder that in addition to hosting Signals from Mars, I've also worked behind the scenes helping other podcasters. With over 16 years of experience and more than 1,200 episodes that I've produced or appeared on, I offer podcasting editing, ghost hosting interviews, and repurposing content into viral clips, show notes, transcripts, and social media posts. If you've got a podcast and need help making it sound professional, or if you want to turn your episodes into content that actually grows your audience, I can help. Check out the podcasting services page over at signalsfrommars.com. Just go all the way to the right on the menu. You'll see work with me, hover over that, and you'll see podcast services and sponsorship. Let me help you make your podcast stand out. Speaking of sponsorships, Signals from Mars is sponsored by listeners like you and also by great sponsors. If you've got a brand, product, or service that connects with rock and metal fans, I'd love to work with you. Our audience isn't casual. They're collectors, concert goers, and gear buyers who support the bands and brands they love. Sponsorship packages start at just $150 a month and include on-air mentions, social media plugs, and even product features. If you want to connect with a loyal rock and metal audience, head on over to the sponsorship page on signalsfrommars.com to learn more. Quick shout out to my patrons, Sean Richmond, Tony Espin, Anthony Mackey, Ed Ferguson, Johan Edistrom, Metal Dan, Chris Vaglio, Gabriel Ruiz, Mark Striegel, Brad Dahl, Jeremy Weltman, Steve Hoker, and Steven Saylor. Thank you guys for all of your support. I kind of resurfaced some, I did bring back some interviews that, or an interview that I did with Bob Nalbandian years ago and used it for some short form content. And one of the things that really hit home with me when going through that old material was how Bob always saw a lot of us as a brotherhood, especially when it came to podcasting. I think it was probably like a modern form of what he was doing with fanzines back in the day. And he saw a lot of the passion that a lot of us had when doing what we do with podcasts, for better or for worse. And Chris Sinzak of the Decibel Geek podcast is the first person that ever brought the name Phil Schaus to my attention. And I've been so privileged to be Chris's friend for so many years. We've never actually met. Hopefully that happens one day. But that kind of helped me put together this interview that I did with Phil. I've been getting a lot of good feedback recently from the interviews that I've been doing. And one of the things that stood out to me from the various people that have reached out to me is that they feel that I'm asking a lot of questions like a fan. That other fans would like to know. And I've had people over the years say, well, you're the journalist. Well, you're this, well, you're that. I'm just a fan who decided to start doing a podcast because someone said, that someone being Mark Striegel, said, hey, you might do a decent job at this. It's almost 17 years later. It will be 17 years this summer that I've started podcasting. And by no means have I been around as Mark has, as the guys at the Classic Metal Show, or any other show that's been around that long. I'm just privileged to know all these different people and have the ability to reach out and talk to them. And I appreciate that you guys are here listening to this episode. I hope you guys enjoy it. We touch upon all things throughout his career, throughout Philip Schaus's career. And it's just a fun chat. I'm biased, but I had a fun time doing it. Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. I welcome on the show Philip Schaus, who is releasing his first EP, Side One. He's known for a ton of things, which we'll get into during the episode. But my first question for you, Phil, is the songs that are featured on Side One, are these songs that you've written just for the EP, or are they songs that you've been working on over the years?
One of them was something I'd had for 20 years. It was just a riff, and that was all I had. I had no melody or lyrics. And the other ones were written with the EP, with like a goal in mind, with the EP in mind. So once that first one was written, I took that riff to my friend Alex Rahal in town, a great writer, and had always told me that when I wanted to do something, you know, to give him a call. So I did. So when we finished that one in like 2 hours, then it was like, you want to do this again? Let's do some more songs. And then it became a thing. Like every couple of weeks I'd go and we'd write a song. So we had several, and I'm like, I've got enough for a thing now.
Right.
So yeah. Most of them are brand new.
Oh, cool. So the neat thing too is, although you're known for playing with other people, I mean, let's be honest, the kind of foundation of rock, of hard rock, and anything that's progressed out of that really kind of comes from the influence of the Beatles, the Stones, stuff of that ilk. So it isn't really that far from the bands that you're playing with.
Right. Especially when you get like to what I really kind of do and play natural, which is kind of, you know, more classic rock type stuff. It isn't, you know, it's not metal, that's for sure.
Right.
It felt natural just because it was me doing it. It wasn't like me trying to sound like anything or it was me. This record is me figuring out what I actually sound like.
Okay.
You know, because I played covers for my career, maybe with the people that wrote them or sang them, but they're covers to me. And so, this was me kind of figuring out my own sound.
When you approached the label to put this EP out, was there any sort of stigma that, oh, it's Phil, the guy that's worked with this person and that person or whatever? Did you look for a label that would just take you for who you are, or how did that work?
They found it. They found the project. I was just going to do the record and just put it out myself on streaming. I really didn't do it with any kind of expectations like, oh, I'm going to do this and this. I'm already way further along than I ever thought I was going to be with this thing. So Wild Kingdom Records in Sweden, I had a couple friends listen to it that were tighter with people at that label, and they played it for them and they were interested. And that was how it all fell together.
Wow. So that's pretty cool though. That has to be rewarding as an artist to have somebody come after you. And, you know, they could have easily said, well, you know, come back when you've got John Corabi on a track, come back when you've got, you know, person X on the track, but right. They want you for you.
Yeah. And that was, it could have been a record like that. It could have been, you know, a guest star thing, but I was like, no, I'm always a guest star on records that I play on. So this is fucking mine. I'm doing everything I possibly can do on this record, singing everything. And I just can't play drums or keys well enough to do it. Or else I would have done that too. But no, I got a Sarah Tomek on drums. Seth.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio. If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
Tim's on keys, and, you know, it's me, you know.
Cool. And I'm sure you've had no shortage of friends to help you out with the drums or keys. So was it difficult to pick them to come aboard, or you knew right away you wanted them? Mm-hmm.
I knew who it was. And luckily, Sarah was available. Sarah is just so in demand. I've known her she's been a friend of mine for, you know, well over a decade now. She's been in town and she is literally always doing something. And I got her like 2 days in between things.
Oh, wow. So
really, really great. Got her in a couple of days and banged it out. And yeah, it was really great. And my buddy Seth Timms is, keyboardist among keyboard players. He's just incredible. And I'm involved in so many different things with him. And he was immediately, it's like, you want to play? It's like, sure. So no, it was easy. And luckily I've got a huge friend group of amazing people to call on. And I got to mention Philip Creamer is a great singer in town. And he came in and did all the high harmonies that I couldn't hit.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, he's got this like Steve Marriott type thing going on and he's phenomenal, and he's a friend, and so it was easy to get him in on it, and and everything fell together.
Did everyone pick up on the vibe you were looking for right off the bat, or was there any type of coaching you needed so that people saw your vision?
There was no really vibe going into it. The producer and I, Brad Jones, started with acoustic work tapes, and that's all we had going into the studio. Nothing else was planned out. It's like, let's just get in there and we'll start with me and Sarah, me on acoustic guitar, no click track, just playing, me and her playing together. Let's just see where it goes. There was no direction or no path. It just kind of like figured itself out and oh, wow. We just worked with it.
Did she end up using a click on the actual EP or is it all just by ear?
No, there's one song on there that has a loop. Mm-hmm. And that's the main, those are the main drums and percussion in it. And she's accenting things, but everything else with like a drum kit, there's no click on it.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Which was Brad's call. And it was kind of my call too. And I was like, can we do this like this? And it's like, yeah, sure we can. I'm like, all right, great. We're using real amps and real people and real instruments. And no click track. So it was very, very organically done from the very beginning.
And that's kind of refreshing too. I spoke to Alex Skolnick yesterday and we were talking about how important, for example, the Last Testament album, you can tell that there's live drums on the album. And as a wannabe drummer myself and someone who's messed around with Superior Drummer and stuff like that, you know, you start to hear albums and you're like, yeah, that's this sample cymbal from this and that. And it just gives like a different kind of breath, a different kind of air, I should say, to the music, having live instruments actually in there.
You can really tell because things start sounding, you start recognizing sounds.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh, that's a Les Paul through a Marshall or whatever, or Telly through a Twin or whatever. It's like, Oh, that's the exact same snare sound.
Yes.
You know, you can start to hear things and you look and it's like, oh, it's the same producer. Okay. He's got his own, you know, bag that he pulls from for everyone. So I really enjoyed, I haven't done a recording with a real amplifier, you know, in a really long time. Everything's with, you know, profilers and plugins, and those things sound phenomenal. Right. But it was still really fun. It's like, all right, we're going click track. All right, we're going real amps, and you know, we're going to treat this like, you know, like in the olden days, right, in the 1900s.
As you were recording the tracks, were there things that just started to pop into your mind, like, oh wow, I want to try, like you're bringing up amps and guitars and stuff like that. Oh wow, I think that this, for lack of a better example, I think that a Gibson Firebird a single coil will sound great over this track on this amp. Or, you know, as the writing process came along, did it kind of fuel your inspiration to try other things?
Yeah, I really did. Before we got in the studio, I didn't really do any kind of thinking about that. I kind of wanted to really keep it because I didn't know, like, this is my first thing like this with my name on it. So I'm like, all right, I just want to go in there and just do it and get it done and keep it really spontaneous. But it did kind of like with guitar pedals and guitar, when it got to guitar overdubs, then it was like, oh, that weird pedal over here that I have might be cool. I just got this. Let's try it.
Right.
There's a tune with a Moog solo. That is one of those old monophonic ones where you had to really be careful and hit one key at a time. I didn't do that. Seth did. But that was a real kind of spontaneous thing. It's like, I don't want a guitar solo here. And it's Brad has all these cool toys in his studio and knows how they all work. So there's harmonium mm-hmm. on it. Like he had a harmonium that he got at the Krishna Temple in New York. That's on a couple tunes. So yeah, we really just kind of flew by the seat of our pants the whole time, but he was a good guide to have, you know. I just hadn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, how important is it to have him steering the ship? Because a lot of times there are artists who try to do things on their own and maybe they're not able to get, you know, I don't want to say the right songs out of them, but sometimes being an artist and doing your own production, you're not as critical with your own work as maybe someone else who comes in and tries to kind of clean things up.
And there's no way to tell you no.
Right.
You get to a certain point. I don't know. I think that's one of my strengths is being well aware of what I can't do.
Okay.
And I knew, like, even writing songs, like I have to have somebody writing it with me to get it. Cause I will come up with something and I'll like that part. And then I just won't know where to go with it. And then before too long, I'll despise the entire piece and scrap it. So I really need somebody there with me to help push it along and no, let's go this way with it. It's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm work better that way. So there was never any, like, you know, self-production thought of in my head. I'm like, that's not happening. Yeah. And Brad was who I wanted to work with. So luckily he was available and he liked the tunes enough to want to work on it with me. So yeah, very lucky to get him involved too. And he was great.
Okay. Since you've recorded side one, have you already written more things for a possible future EP or maybe full length?
Side two,
yeah.
Yeah. I've written a couple more songs, primarily to fill up time for the tour I'm doing.
Okay.
Because the record is 18 minutes long.
Right.
And we started to get offers for shows. I'm doing a Swedish tour next month. And it was like, you know, 75 minute slots. And I was like, shit, I gotta have some more tunes because I didn't want to go play like an hour of covers,
right?
And then just the record. So the record will be played, some covers, of course, but also some brand new songs are in there as well.
Okay, would it be side two or side B? Would you mess with people and switch it up like that? Because we used to get side A and B as well.
That's good. So funny you mentioned that. So my EP is called Side One. So the sides of that are side A and B. to stop confusion. So if I did a second EP, I suppose I will call that one side two. Okay. And then those will be A and B as well.
Okay. But
I don't know if it'll be if I'll keep writing, if it'll be a full length or not, I'm not sure.
Okay. As you mentioned, with covers, would you pull from cover? Well, actually, this is kind of a dumb question because you've done all types of covers in the past. I mean, people have known you for Accept and Ace and Gene and stuff like that. But I mean, before we started recording, we kind of touched upon what you've done in Nashville with the Rock and Roll Residency, and you've played
everything.
Infinite amount of covers. I mean, you wouldn't have to necessarily pull from, you know, the Kiss catalog or the Accept catalog. You could play anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we're doing a couple, you know, I kind of needed to do a couple just because of who I've played with and what people know me kind of for, but there are some really left field covers that the residency wouldn't have touched.
Okay.
So yeah, we did really go kind of, I went deep and picked the covers and they're like, really? Some of them are pretty oddball choices, but I think it'll be really cool in this setting and with these, with, in this instrumentation. So a couple of them are going to be pretty expected, but there are some definitely not unexpected ones as well.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Talking about the residency, you've played with pretty much a who's who there.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio. If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
What's the one person that you still can't kind of wrap your head around being able to play with them?
Well, there's a few. Gene came and played, but we were already, that was when we were in his band.
Okay.
When we had Roger Glover and Don Airey from Deep Purple come down and play, they came down 2 weeks in a row. And that was pretty intense. We became friends with them because they were here so much recording in Nashville, and our paths ended up crossing when they were doing their first record here. So that remained. So that was pretty wild. And then Robin Zander came. Robin literally showed up. We were done. I think we were done. And the word got around like Robin Zander's here. So he finally makes his way out. And it wasn't a venue. We did these shows at an Irish pub called Dan McGinnis. It was a great place. And the shows were on the patio with like a 6-inch stage and PA on sticks. It wasn't a proper venue at all, but that was the charm of it. So he shows up there and he walks out and we're like, this Robin Zander's here. And we're talking to him about what we want to do. And we're like, we literally know so many Cheap Trick songs. He goes, I don't want to do any of that shit. I'm like, all right, what do you want to do? AC/DC. We know the whole catalog. What do you want to do? Long Way to the Top. You got it. So we go up there and we do Long Way to the Top. And then we ended up doing, I think, He's a Whore.
Okay.
Or Hot Love. We ended up doing a Cheap Trick song or two with him before we let him go. And then he and I come back the next week with his son. We did Dead Flowers and some more. So, yeah, those were nuts. Like, and plus with, like, Robin, when you hear that voice come through a monitor wedge, like, wow, he really sounds like that. That's him. That's the voice.
Right.
And when he's right here, you know, and you can hear him and he's, you know, and he's cool and he's having fun. And it's crazy when you're listening and you hear those voices come through that, not the PA speaker, but like through the monitor back at you. It's pretty special.
Yeah, cool. And who's, you know, if he's requesting something, who's going to say no to him?
Yeah, and we knew at this point, we knew everything. You couldn't really stump us on most of that kind of stuff. And we're like, we got you.
Right.
We got you covered. Whatever you want to do, Robin. You know. Cool.
Was there one person that you guys were trying to get to play with you that just never happened? Was kind of the, you know, the one that got away?
We always thought we were going to get Steven Tyler.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because we had a couple ends with him that were regulars at our show. And we always thought that, and he was in town a lot at that point.
Right.
So he's going to show up. We know he's going to show up. He never did. So that's the one that we kind of never did get.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cause there, I guess Brad lives down there now.
Brad's been here for a while. I think he's, and I don't know if Steven still has his place here.
Oh, okay.
He might not, but I know he did because he did a kind of a country record for a while and he was here a lot. I don't think anybody else from, I think Joe's in Florida. So yeah, then the guys are all spread around.
Okay. And with regards to Accept, recently it was mentioned that Accept is going back to a two guitarist format. What are your feelings on that? And is there anything you can share regarding that?
I miss Uwe. Uwe was great. Okay. I love having, I just miss him personally being around too on stage, just being around and going to get ice cream with him and stuff. We had a really good time. I've had to rethink the parts because we did have everything divided up for the three of us. Mm-hmm. And there were some songs were definite, like, okay, you that, you know, so it was very thing. So now I've got to kind of combine some of the things that were split up between the three of us. So kind of Wolf takes his and I kind of fill in, like Wolf kind of did what he normally always did. And then Uwe and I kind of worked on dividing everything up. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of like recombining those parts now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we almost dropped the ball at the beginning of this interview with Wolf was an interview that I did a full 40-minute interview with Wolf and it never recorded. And it was the software I used just didn't work.
Oh, no.
I got done with the interview. I was super happy. I go to playback, corrupted file. I'm like, nothing. No.
A bummer.
Yeah. But one of those things to remember, I guess that's.
He's a good interview. Lots of stories with that guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Having worked with both Ace and Gene, what's the one song that you suggested to either one of them that you never thought that they would have listened to you and covered?
Ace. Pretty much didn't get, we didn't get to do any, we didn't get any of them across.
Okay.
Ace was a very creature of habit and didn't like to venture too far outside of his kind of set list that he kind of stuck to. With Gene, however, Gene was down with everything. And I had suggested Love Theme from Kiss, which we ended up doing.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't think that was gonna go, and we worked it out. It was kind of we did it right before we did it kind of into War Machine, like we kind of didn't end it, and it was kind of funny story. When we only rehearsed twice with Gene, once at the beginning of the first year and once at the beginning of the second year with him, and this is our second rehearsal with him, so second year when I kind of suggested that song, and he was like, "This we could do this. This is good." So we work it out and play it through and it sounds great. And he goes, he would act like sometimes, and he wasn't presumptuous about this. He would act like that we didn't know every single thing about Kiss, because we all did. And he goes, you know, we used to play that song before a song called Acrobat. And we're like, we know. And he goes, that song never had a form. And we go, really? And I was like, we all knew the tune. And he goes, yeah, really. He goes, we always would kind of, it was all eye contact. And we're like, we know it. So the next time we did Love Theme, we went into Acrobat.
Okay.
So we played the whole thing. We played Acrobat with Gene in rehearsal. And it didn't get recorded because I recorded a lot of the rehearsals, not to like secret or anything, because he knew it. But I was like, if we worked up an arrangement or something, it'd be like, okay, I'm going to record this. So I went back and I found that day. And I recorded a lot of the rehearsal, but I didn't get Acrobat.
Oh, wow.
I was so bummed about that. Yeah. Because I really wanted to get that on tape. Because he probably hadn't played that since 74.
Right.
Maybe. So, yeah, he still kind of knew it.
That's crazy. It seems like he really enjoyed playing with you guys. And even with this last iteration of band that he was touring with, it seemed like, I don't know, like he was free to do whatever he wanted. And even though he's known for being the demon and all the accoutrements with Kiss and everything, it seemed like at the end of the day, he loves just being a musician. He loves playing and being with his people.
Yeah, he really liked being a guy in the band.
Right.
With him. We were with him all the time. We all traveled together. At the time, there was no crew. So we just, the five of us, you know, arrived together, rode to the venue together, to the hotel, ate catering together. And he was fantastic. He was just a great hang. Easy to talk to, fun to talk to. Yeah, he was. And musically, very good. And really adventurous, because he was down with pretty much anything we suggested. Mm-hmm. You know, when it was time to do some deep cuts, he came to us and, what should we do? And we're like, all right, this is what we wanted to do with this thing the whole time. So we never stopped suggesting songs to him. We always kept it fresh. I don't think we did the same set list twice.
Okay.
It was at least one thing was different. So it always kept it fun and exciting. And he would take, people would shout out stuff and you couldn't really stump us. And so we would play a verse and a chorus of whatever they would shout out. And that was always fun too. He was very brave that he was very adventurous and brave that way.
Yeah. That's interesting. After playing, you know, the same set list for years without varying that much, that he, you know, he gets it. He gets it that the diehards want to hear all this, you know.
And that's who was there. Like when we, you know, in the States and in Europe, we played bigger shows, but it was still diehards. And we still threw in, you know, She's So European, Charisma, you know, Got Love for Sale, things like that. We're always Ladies in Waiting. We did a couple times. Like we'd throw in these tunes and they'd be there for a couple shows, then go away, then come back in. And so, yeah, it was always revolving.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were out in Vegas when they did the Landlocked cruise. What was that like to be part of?
I was not out there. Jeremy and Ryan were. That was during the Accept tour.
Okay.
We were on tour with Queensryche this past fall when that was going on.
Okay.
So I missed that one.
So I actually researched that, and I did Phil Schau's Kiss, Landlocked, Las Vegas. I did the dates, everything. And sure enough, Google comes up with a picture of you and this and that. And I'm like, all right, so I can ask this.
Yeah. See that? Sorry. It was awesome. But I did a lot of the cruises. I did a lot of the Kiss, the actual cruises, and those were fun.
Yeah. Okay. There's material that was supposedly recorded before Ace passed away. He was working on Origins, and I know that you had recorded on one of the Origins albums.
Mm-hmm. Number two. Yeah.
Yeah, I know with what he was recording. Well, I know. I'm saying I know. I don't really know. I'm guessing that due to the process, the vocals is probably the last thing that was going to be worked on with what had been recorded already. Do you know if any of that will ever come out?
Man, I haven't thought about that but I did hear that he had said that he's working on stuff, and there was an Origins, and he was always working on something.
Right.
But you know what? I haven't thought about that since he passed. I have no clue. I've not heard of it and didn't even pop in my head, but there's something there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he had some project always, he was always going on in the studio.
Yeah. I'm hoping that there's something that, you know, still comes out. I mean, within the music business, although there's a finality to life, there's so many careers that continue on after people pass away. So
how much did Jimi Hendrix record? Good God.
Stuff coming out.
Still stuff coming out. It's like the guy recorded for 3 years.
Yeah.
It's unreal. You know, Prince has said, well, Prince had a longer career the same way. There's this, and then, you know, there's archives of Van Halen stuff that whatever. Just, you know, this guy. So all those guys did was record, but the Hendrix blows me away how in through like 3 or 4 years, that guy still has new albums coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the Van Halen stuff though, I remember seeing Eddie in interviews saying, well, there's a reason why this stuff hasn't come out. So there's part of me that wants to hear it. And there's part of me that says, you know, well, if he didn't want it to come out, then it, you know, I don't know. It's kind of selfish to want to hear it afterwards.
Right. Some stuff is shelved for a reason, even if it is Van Halen, you know, it's right. Like some stuff that even, you know, like the Beatles didn't make, you know, was left on the cutting room floor, so to speak. You know, a lot of that stuff we've heard now, maybe not through official releases, but, you know, it's been bootleg and everything. But yeah, I mean, even the greats put out some stuff that's not as great. I won't say shit because it's probably still pretty great, but it's still not as great. And I can understand them going, well, that's not quite up to snuff.
Yeah.
You know, I get that.
Yeah. And we know that Ace had so much stuff, especially in the 80s before the first Fraley's Comet album came out. Yeah. You know, on the last album that he did with Steve Brown, he did one of those songs, but there's a ton of songs that he had demoed that just have never seen a formal release. So it'll be interesting to see how that's all handled.
Yeah, I guess it's once that happens, it's the family. Like, you know, I think Wolfgang is the kind of keeper of the archive now for Van Halen. I guess it's just the family's duty now.
Okay. So you've got some dates in Scandinavia coming up?
Yeah, all of March, doing Sweden and Norway. And I leave Thursday. I go over there a few weeks early. We're rehearsing up. And it's 10 shows in Sweden and one in Norway.
So okay. They're
all in March. Yeah.
Who's going to be playing with you?
It's From the Helicopters and Entombed, Nicke Andersson.
Okay.
If you're a Helicopters fan or know about them, Nicke is the lead guitar player, lead singer. Mm-hmm. Driving force of that band, and he's playing drums for me.
Okay.
He was the drummer in Entombed, so he's a drummer first. And then on bass is Mats Rydström, that I'm still pronouncing his name. The role of the R is so hard for us to do. Probably not for you. You're probably pretty good at it. But for and stuff. Mats is great. Mats is in a ton of stuff. Jesper Lindgren is on guitar with me. Okay. He's in a band called Velvet Insane. And I've known all these guys for years and they're friends, and they were all available amazingly enough for March. So I'm extremely fortunate to have these guys with me. So it's just me flying over and I'm meeting them and just kind of being based in Stockholm for the next 2 months.
Oh, wow. Cool. How much of you going over and playing with them is also hoping that there's some type of connection or sparks that maybe you guys can write something together?
That's totally possible. I've actually got a couple of really rough ideas that aren't even on acoustic work tape yet. I've got a couple acoustic work tape finished tunes that we're going to work up as a band. Mm-hmm. But I've got one or two that are still in the working phase. And that's totally doable. And that would be great. Yeah. So there's a Swedish tour 7-inch that is those guys and me on it, because the record obviously isn't. But it was an older tune of mine that we recorded, and we did a Beatles cover. So, but yeah, I'd totally be cool with writing a tune. Okay. And doing that one. We definitely have the time to fill on the show. So, yeah, there'll be some, and on the record, with all the songs on the record, everything is very, pretty short and to the point. Mm-hmm. But you know, live, there's room for some of these to be stretched out and really kind of have fun and expand on them. So we're going to do all that stuff as well.
Cool. So where should people go to purchase side one and ensure that the most amount of money gets back into your pockets?
I believe that would be going to Sound Pollution. That's the distribution company. And if you go to my Instagram page, there's a link in my bio, and there's a Swedish store, okay, and there is a rest of the world store for Sound Pollution. So the record is not out yet. It comes out February 27th.
Right.
So they can go pre-order it now, as well as the 7-inch single with the Swedish band. So that's going to be for sale as well on the store. And the single, Run Away From You, is out now on streaming and on YouTube. There's a video as well.
Excellent. Okay. And where should people go to keep up with you?
The socials, Instagram and Facebook. I'm kind of more active on Instagram, and everything I do on there kind of seeps over to my Facebook page. So those are the best places. There's no website at the moment. I don't really know if there's a really good reason for a website.
Right.
It's like everything's already there for you. But yeah, as soon as I'm over there in rehearsals, I'll be posting more and pushing the shows more. So I'm pretty active on there. I'm pretty visible on there. So
okay,
it's a lot of, if it's not music related, it's just complete absurd stupidity. So please forgive me. But that's what my page is. So,
well, you're upfront about it.
Yes, I'm coming clean.
Yeah,
I have no shame about it either. So,
excellent. Well, I appreciate your time today. I enjoy the EP and hope that this helps turn some people onto it as well, and hopefully some.
Thank you.
About the shows.
Thanks for having me, Victor. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a good rest of your day, sir.
Likewise, man. Have a good one. Thanks, Victor.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Signals from Mars podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.